You're listening to a Prairie Punk House Companion right here on the Prairie Punk Press Network.
The views expressed by any host or any guest on the Prairie Punk House Companion are the personal views or opinions of the people who express them and do not reflect the views or opinions of anyone else on the show or any company, employer, or any other organization that the individual expressing them has or will affiliate with in the past, present, or future. Hi everyone, you're listening to Prairie Punk House Companion. We're on episode 10, and my name is Neckbone.
Hi, I'm Jerbear.
And
I don't have anything quippy to say today. Sorry.
I don't know. Either.
I'm just Jerbear.
Nothing special. I think it's an understatement to say that we are ill prepared for most episodes. But we are especially ill prepared for this one, I think. would you concur?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a week. I'm really busy at work, and I have to get to an airport at 7 o'clock in the morning tomorrow to fly to Kansas City to do some work. And I still have to pack, and I've had swim lessons with my youngest and trying to get her to bed. So It's been a night, and you know, it was Father's Day, and that was a crazy day. So we're flying by the seat of our pants, and it's probably going to be a quicker episode because we got a late start.
I also just moved, so everything is just in disarray. More space, but you know, no matter what, moving sucks every single time. I mean, we'll probably just pay our houses off with all the fat money we're making from this podcast.
I mean, you know, like, subscribe. Yeah. Donate on Ko-fi and become a patron.
We have zero. Now, we have only been around for
ten
months.
Episodes.
Yeah. But yeah, we've only been around for two, three months. So that's not bad. I was watching, you know, a YouTuber the other day talk about how they didn't really get any significant amount of subscribers. Their subscriber count was less than 50 for the first year they were on YouTube.
Yeah.
So...
Are they doing something as niche as we are?
Just standard lefty shit.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't think it's as niche as we are, but yeah.
Yeah. Just kinda... I know the YouTube algorithm is definitely making it hard on leftist content creators right now.
Mm-hmm.
I hear the leftists that I watch on YouTube all talk about how difficult it is right now on the algorithms.
Oh yeah.
But you know, we're doing this for fun. This is not our living. So
right.
If you can't support us, that'd be great. No pressure. But we are going to start doing some, more exclusive content behind a paywall. Perhaps. I think we're still planning on doing Suburbia movie review soon.
Suburbia, two different movies.
Yeah. Just some updates on stuff since we're talking about that. I've gotten a couple messages from people. There's a band playing a show on July 11th at Kirby's. They told me about their show, said they really like the podcast, so I'm going to try and make it out to that.
That's
probably
awesome.
Not as easy for you to make it.
No,
from Chicago.
I don't live anywhere.
I'm going to try and go out on the 11th to see Cosmic Beans. Cosmic Bean?
They're at Kirby's?
They're playing at Kirby's.
Kirby's
with the travel guide.
I'm going to assume that Kirby's probably doesn't have the same owner that they had 20 years ago.
No.
Okay.
They don't have the same owners they had a week ago.
We'll get into that in a minute, but I'm not trying to throw anyone under the bus, and this is allegedly, I went to Kirby's beer store when I was about 16 years old and did not have any trouble getting beer at all, allegedly.
I think it's tougher now.
Probably.
Things were different in the 90s. I know even when I became a bartender in the early aughts, you know, we got hit by ABC. They sent somebody in and got us with getting served underage. So we all had to take a training course from the ABC and pay a fine and shit.
Damn.
And for anyone who is underage that tries to go to a bar and get served underage, just know the bar does not pay the penalty. The server does. So mm-hmm. you're fucking workers over if you try and get underage alcohol at a bar.
Right.
It's not fucking cool.
Yeah.
Get somebody to buy you beer and drink at home.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Preferably like if you've got a cool older sibling or cousin who will buy it for you. Somebody who you're not going to get in trouble, basically. Or if they do get in trouble, they'll just get like scolded by your parents or something. Who knows? But
yeah. And then somebody else sent me their band. It's cool to hear people's art and hear what they're doing mm-hmm. and keep making that shit. Keep putting your stuff out there. It's fucking rad. And now let's do corrections real quick, because I fucked up real bad when we were talking to little Johnny. But he fucked up too. And that was part of my confusion.
Oh, yeah.
He said, so we're talking about the Against Me show. There was only one Against Me show. Mm-hmm. They did play after Calloused. But they were a three-piece, not a two-piece. When he said they were a two-piece, it threw me off, because I remember they had a bass player there. So I thought maybe there was two shows. And it was fuzzy in my memory if it was one show or two show anyway.
Mm-hmm.
There was only the one show. And it was really cool, but Lil Johnny fucked up too.
Yeah. Now, correct me if I'm wrong too. And I remembered this show after the fact, and I imagined it. I did drink a lot at the time, but didn't this Bike as a Pipe Bomb play at the Rainbow Dungeon of Rock at some point?
I do not know.
Okay.
That was past my time. I was back in Wichita trying to be sober.
Okay. Well, if anyone who lived at the Rainbow House,
that would have been a fun show.
Yeah. I think I have a vague memory of I either saw them or I saw some other folk punk band that I thought was them, because I had just discovered them at the time. At the time, like, they were like a new discovery for me, so I could be wrong.
So I think at that point in time, there was Against Me, mm-hmm. His Bike is a Pipe Bomb, and maybe Defiance Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there was much else in the way of folk punk at the time, but I could be wrong.
Anybody at the Rainbow House, if you could, reach out and let me know if I imagined that, or if it was just a different folk punk band, or if I just completely made the whole thing up in my head because I was too drunk to remember what was going on. Could be any of those, or maybe something else entirely. Let me know.
Nick sent me some messages. Chris's car was a Datsun, I think.
Oh, a Datsun. That makes sense. That tracks. Yeah. I can picture Chris in a Datsun.
Nope. Sorry, I was wrong. A Daytona.
A Dodge Daytona?
That said door.
That's disappointing. I was really hoping it was a Datsun.
Oh. Nick used your ID to get into the Grimple show.
Yes. Yep. The logic behind that, and I think I remember thinking this at the time, and I think I said this, and I wasn't saying this as a joke. I think I actually said this and was serious. I said, we have the same first name, so they'll probably let you in. And that made sense in my head. I should mention that we pre-gamed a lot of shows, so I was probably already incredibly intoxicated.
Yeah. So the other part of his message for Correction Corner that is very funny is Johnny left the show.
Mm-hmm.
To go outside for some reason. He was like, hey, they got beer in there. And then he couldn't get back into the show.
I think I remember that too. I assumed that everybody we hung out with was less drunk than us. I don't know why I assumed that.
I mean, we were the drunkest people I knew
for
the most part.
Right.
I mean, there were some squatters that were drunker than us. All right. So on to that. I mentioned I was going to Kirby's.
Yeah. Yeah. What happened to Kirby's?
So the majority shareholder, I guess, the majority owner of Kirby's is Alex Thomas. He was in the band Ophil, which you probably remember from the 90s when everything in Wichita revolved around ska because that's all there was.
I remember Ophil very well. My girlfriend at the time was a huge Ophil fan. That's how I discovered mm-hmm. them, actually. But yeah, anyone in our audience who doesn't know, could you enlighten them about Ophil?
They were a ska band from Winfield. They had some metal influences, and you know, they were a very predominant band in the Wichita scene in the early mid 90s on. When I was in Spirit of the Stairs, we started playing shows in 2003. I think we played a show with Ophil even then. They come around every now and again and play shows. I don't know if they're doing anything anymore. They might mm-hmm. do a reunion show here and there, but they were the predominant punk adjacent band at that point. I mean, they played all the time. Every show Ophil was at.
Every venue in Wichita. Yeah. And I would wager every venue in Kansas, Missouri, Nebraska, Oklahoma.
Yeah, I mean, we saw them play at the Bottleneck when we lived in Kansas City. I don't remember mm-hmm. who they were playing with. It might have been the Citizen Fish show, actually.
Were they playing with Citizen Fish?
I don't remember. I mean, I know Citizen Fish wasn't the only band playing, but I mean, I don't know. Hard to say. It was a ska show, so maybe. When I think of ska shows in Kansas in the 90s, I think of Ophil pretty much.
Yeah.
They brought a lot of great bands to town. They did a lot for the music scene, and Alex has continued to do a lot for the local music scene for, you know, 30 years at least. He's been either putting on shows, playing shows, or now owning venues, including Kirby's. And he is the majority owner right now and does a great, he's been a great steward of venue. Kirby's is a 52-year-old venue. It's right across the street from Wichita State University. It's been a staple of the alternative scene in Wichita for that long, basically. It's always been an inclusive place. And I think 2018, he got a partner, a husband and wife partner, purchased 49% of Kirby's and had a shift in political beliefs around COVID, as some people did, and took a major rightward shift. And last week, somebody commented on one of the minority owners of Kirby's posts about a barbecue or something. And since it's Pride Month, somebody was like, great, I will bring my LGBTQ friends along. It'll be a party. And the owner, the wife, it's a husband and wife partnership there. Aside from Alex didn't do anything wrong in this situation. He's a great ally. He's always been fucking rad. He is not at all the problem. Kirby's is not the problem. But she made some fucking comment about how Pride now includes people that drink Pedialyte.
Yes. Yep.
And equated that with Pride and LGBTQ folks, and she heard this off of some right-wing bullshit on YouTube, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody tried to correct her, and she doubled and tripled down on that, and then made a comment of, why do we need a month to celebrate genitalia anyway, mm-hmm. And that she doesn't give a shit who she offends and stuff like that. So it's not just a simple misunderstanding. There's some ideological bigotry there.
Yeah.
And of course, everyone in Wichita like blew the fuck up, and they were already in the process of selling their stake in Kirby's.
Mm-hmm.
Alex was rightly upset by the whole situation. You know, he's been friends with them for a long time, so he's kind of taken a more neutral stance, but definitely understands how they need to not be involved in Kirby's anymore. Mm-hmm. So they went ahead and moved on with the sale, and there are new owners now. There are people I know, people I think will also be good stewards of Kirby's, like Alex is. He is no longer a majority holder in the bar. I think there's now, including him, 6 owners of Kirby's. Mm-hmm. And they have made multiple statements about how it will remain inclusive. They will celebrate all of our friends,
mm-hmm.
all communities, and not be shitty fucking bigots. So,
right.
I'm fully confident that Kirby's will remain a safe and inclusive place for everybody, as it always has been.
And
Alex was taking some heat, and he doesn't deserve anything. As soon as he found out what happened, I think he took care of it as best he could.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't think it's fair that the bar was getting shit and that Alex was getting shit.
Mm-hmm.
This rests directly on the shoulders of Ryan Bell and Tanisha Bell for the bullshit they fucking said.
And I don't even know who they are. Were they part of the scene when we were coming out?
Not when you were here, I don't think.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I have no idea who they are, and yeah, I want to make it clear, I don't think anyone who listens would question this, but just in case somebody stumbles upon our podcast, there is no LGBTQ movement that I have ever seen anywhere that includes those who are attracted to people who cannot consent due to age.
No, that's fucking
not
bullshit.
A single one of them.
It's not a part of the LGBTQ
right.
community at all.
And anyone
that tries to tell you that is somebody lied to them or they're lying to you.
Yes.
Full of fucking shit.
Right. There's no pattern of inappropriate behavior toward children within the LGBTQIA community that I have ever seen. And statistically, it is even less so than it is in straight cisgender circles. So.
Yep. Now, shall we talk about moving to Lawrence?
Yeah, that's right. Okay. All right. So we covered a little bit of this with Johnny. Well, Johnny was on. So yeah, I'd been living in St. Louis. In 2000 to 2001, moved. I was back in Lawrence before 9/11, though, because we're going to get to that. But yeah, so I'd been living in St. Louis. My roommate at the time moved to Chicago, and I didn't want to just live in St. Louis by myself. I'd made a few friends, but I mean, there were people I'd known for less than a year, and you know, it was just kind of one of those things. I didn't really know anyone that well. I had a bartending job, which I could have gotten anywhere. I was going to a community college, which I could have gone anywhere. So there was really nothing keeping me there. And I decided that I was either going to get in my car and move to New York by myself, or that I was going to go move back to Lawrence, where I knew people and be kind of part of a community again. I chose the latter. And I ended up moving back to Lawrence in what month was that? June?
May? It would have been May. It would have been May because when we were up there moving you back, we watched the season finale of season 5 of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. So when I left Kansas City, my move to Lawrence was really rough because I quit my job in Kansas City because the new manager was a fucking asshole. I got to Lawrence. I got a job immediately because I had like a year and a half experience at a health food store. So I went to the health food store in Lawrence. Got a job there immediately. Did I already talk about this at all?
Not really. Not the health food store in Lawrence.
Okay. So
what was that one again? I vaguely remember that one.
The Merck.
The Merck. That's right. Okay.
And it was when it was still on 9th Street, before it moved up to Ohio. So it was still over kind of by Burrito King. The thing about it was they wanted me to be there at 6 a.m. on Saturdays.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived with, say, 1.5 other punk rockers. Justin lived there, obviously, but we had a roaming cast of characters who stayed there every now and again. Our friend Paul slept in the basement periodically. Our friend Brian slept in the basement every now and again. I think Mike, who played violin or viola in That's Not Fair to the Universe of the Molecules, lived with us for a little while. It was a lot of people in and out. And staying up all night drinking, basically. So Friday nights was really hard to go to sleep because of, you know, I wanted to hang out with everybody while they were partying. And also it was just really loud and difficult to sleep. So my first weekend there, I made it to work on time. No big deal. The second week I worked there, I was 30 minutes late, and I was supposed to be there to unload the truck because we got a delivery truck. And I was working with a middle-aged woman, and me being late was really hard on her because she basically had to unload it by herself, which really sucks. I felt like a huge asshole. And then the third week, I was an hour late because of partying at her house. And they fired me, but I was too dumb to realize I got fired. So I worked my whole shift on Saturday and Sunday. And I went in Monday, and my manager was like, "What are you doing here?" And I was like, "I'm working." She's like, "No, you don't work here anymore. Leave." So that began a probably 2-month to 3-month series of being unemployed and having really shitty jobs. Mm-hmm. I worked at the screen printing shop that it seems like everybody worked at. So a bunch of the Flanders kids worked at the screen printing shop. Justin worked there. It was full of punk rockers. So I got a job there, and I think lasted a week, and then everybody quit.
Oh, damn. Why'd everybody quit?
I don't remember.
Was it like some to protest something, or just get sick of working
there? I have
there?
No idea. They didn't like the owner, I think. They just got sick of working there. I'm not sure what happened. I'm sure Nick or Chris or Justin could fill in that gap. So after that, it took me a long time to get another job. And maybe we should talk about jobs that punk rockers get at some point.
Yeah.
I worked at a tofu factory.
Yeah. And then you got me a job at that tofu factory after I moved in with you. I think that was my first job when I got back to Lawrence was you said, "Hey, the tofu factory I work at is hiring." And I was like, "All right, cool, whatever." So I went from being a bartender to working at a tofu factory. Makes perfect sense.
Yeah. And I had to quit because they couldn't make payroll. And I was like, "Look, man, I love what you're fucking doing here, but I can't work here for free."
Mm-hmm.
So he scrounged up the money to pay me and paid me. And I was like, "All right, I'm still not fucking working here anymore."
Yeah.
So then I went to wash dishes at La Familia, which is next to the Bottleneck. RIP La Familia is no longer there, which is very sad.
Fantastic.
Still
restaurant.
In my mind, my favorite Mexican restaurant.
Yeah, I love it. I worked there too. Tex-Mex, I also washed. In fact, I think you got me that job there. Washing dishes when you switched over to the make table. And Joe. Yeah, Joe washed dishes there too.
Anthony from The Esoteric worked there.
Mm-hmm.
Julie was a server there.
That's right. That's when I first met her. Yeah.
Yeah, that's how we met Julie. She's rad. Hi, Julie, if you're listening.
If you're one of the people listening. Isn't she in Minnesota now? I think she's not that far from me.
Yeah. Yeah. She's up in Minnesota.
Does she know Johnny?
Yeah, I'm sure they know each other. I don't know. I don't know why they wouldn't know each other.
I don't
know. They ever hang out anymore. Yeah. And so then I went from washing dishes there, which to this day, if I could live on, like, if I could get paid a livable wage, I would go back to washing dishes. It was so fucking chill and so fucking easy. I listened to music and washed dishes and smoked cigarettes all day, and it was a breeze. One of the best jobs I ever had was working at La Familia. Even when I went to being a line cook there, it was still fucking great. I loved working at La Familia.
That was
great job. Great place to work.
Great owner. The owners of that place were super, super awesome. Super nice.
Yeah.
Like they always, and I was late a lot and they never fired me. Like they could have. They would have been justified to just be like, you know what? Get the fuck out of here. Like if you can't show up on time, then you're fired. But they never did. They were just like, oh, it was kind of like this whole like, well, you'll do better next time.
Wow. I mean, they knew the pool of people they had.
So. Right. Yeah. It was just kind of like almost like a great. Disappointed mom. And I'm just like, oh, okay, well, I'll do better for you. Well, I'll be closer to on time.
A lot of businesses, a lot of people give shit businesses for like, you know, saying that, you know, we're like a family or whatever. But like, it was there. I mean, as far as exploiting workers go, it was it was better than when I went to work at Urban Outfitters. I got paid better at La Familia than I did at Urban Outfitters. You know, they treated us well. I mean, they're a small mom and pop business. So obviously the pay wasn't great, but you know, I was able to pay my bills and get wasted all the time. So,
and isn't the owner of Urban Outfitters like super right wing?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I didn't know that at the time, but yeah. Terrible.
Yeah.
But you know, I had a bunch of friends that worked at Urban Outfitters too. So, I was like, I worked at Urban Outfitters and La Familia at the same time. So I was, you know, working two full-time jobs basically.
Oh yeah.
And then, yeah, that's it. And, before you moved in, you know, it was just a lot of going to potlucks at the Pirate House, a lot of hanging out at the Pirate House. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we put that shitty little band together and played that one show, well, two shows, one at our house and one at the Pirate House. But for my birthday, that's when we had that huge party and Element played. And there was a party. There was also a show and a party at the Pirate House. And there was also a party at that hippie house across the street where those girls lived. Those hippie girls that lived across the street from us.
On Kentucky?
Yeah, it was on Kentucky. It was so there was the apartments to the northwest of us, and then there was the big greenhouse, to the southwest of us.
Okay.
And it was that big greenhouse that was having a party, whatever. There was three huge parties and it all met in the middle of Kentucky and it was chaos. And the cops showed up and tried to tell us to break it up. And I was like, this is out of my hands. Like, I can't, there's nothing I can do about this anymore.
Yeah.
We had kegs. The Pirate House had a keg. The other party had a keg. And it was just people met in the middle of the street and had somebody punched a cop car.
Yeah.
Or like a windshield and broke their hand punching a cop's windshield. I don't remember any fights. I think it was pretty peaceful and just fun. And that's when you decided you wanted to move back to Lawrence.
I had such a blast at that party, and I was so sick of not really knowing people very well. And you know, I'd kind of become kind of in St. Louis. I kind of became kind of an introvert. I hung out with a few people that I'd met through work. And there was a few like regulars at like the punk bars that were around that I'd see at, like venues and shows and stuff. But like, I'm not as outgoing as you and a lot of other people are. Most of the people I met, it's because I was, you know, your roommate and your friend.
You say that, but like, you weren't just in the background. We were definitely like a team. Like,
yeah, for sure.
I may have done a lot of the lifting at first, but like once the two of us got going, I mean, it was, you know, like a goofy duo of idiots. One of the other things I remember from before you moved back was they had that, I don't remember what the anarchist gathering thing was at the Pirate House, but there was, what the fuck? I can't think of what it was. I don't know. They had a bunch of anarchists in town and they were doing like workshops and shit.
Oh.
All weekend, and then we wound up having an 80s dance party at the annex, and there was like 150 anarchists in our house dancing to 80s music, and it was nuts. It was so much fun. It was a really good time.
80s dance parties kind of became a phenomenon for a while around that time, early 2000s. Yeah. It's kind of like how people are nostalgic for the 90s and the early 2000s now. You know, yeah, we were very nostalgic for the 80s then, and 80s dance parties just kind of exploded out of nowhere. And yeah, they were, well, I remember a time, I mean, when there was like one a week at least.
Yeah. And I mean, there would be like costume parties too. I remember I would tease my hair and put a eyeliner on and go to 80s dance parties in Lawrence all the time. We'd call KJHK and try and get them to DJ our dance parties. And, you know, sometimes they would think it was fun. Sometimes they would think it was really fucking annoying. But yeah, and I think it was just like when we hit our early 20s, 80s became really fucking nostalgic. So it was fun. A lot of the self-seriousness of the 90s punk rock scene that we were in kind of eased up, and
yeah,
people started to have more fun than just be serious all the time. And maybe it's just the people we were hanging out with. I don't really know, but it definitely seemed in the 90s like everything was really serious and dire, and you know, we had a lot of fun because we were drunk all the time, but we weren't having dance parties and shit like that. We were getting drunk and complaining about politics and,
right,
and shit. And it, and I don't know if it's just who we were hanging out with or what, but it became more fun,
yeah,
around that time.
There was a few dance parties in the 90s. I remember a couple in Wichita. I mean, we had the Rocky Horror Picture Show dance party at the Fannings.
Oh, in the,
yeah,
I mean, that, I guess that did start there, but we wound up at the spot doing that in the ditch.
Oh, okay.
In the canal route in between the elevated highways and that waterway. Andy, IY, and I were in the water splashing around doing the Time Warp.
Oh, yeah. I do remember we did the Time Warp. And
maybe it's just Andy.
Maybe.
She brings
maybe,
the,
yeah,
party.
If she's just around, then dance parties happen.
That could be.
Yeah. But I remember thinking when we were doing the Time Warp in the Fannings apartment, I remember thinking like, man, I bet the people who live underneath them really hate us right now.
I mean, it was probably less insane than any other night. Just doing the Time Warp was probably not that big of a deal compared to some, right, of the other shit we got up to in there.
That's
like
true.
Like throwing every single item of glass out the,
yeah, window. All right, that's fair enough. Yeah. It's a relatively low-key night. They're only stomping around. It's no big deal.
And then you moved to town.
Yeah. So, yeah. I moved, left St. Louis.
Justin moved into the Pirate House.
Right. And I took over his room. Mm-hmm. And I had just become, like, in St. Louis, especially by the end, after my roommate moved out, I'd kind of become kind of a recluse. I spent most of my time playing like video games and just sitting at home and then going to work and drinking, yeah, by myself. I would just get pissed drunk by myself.
Yeah.
That's in my apartment.
Kind of how I was when I lived in Kansas City by myself before you came up.
Yes. Yeah. It was a sad and depressing life. And you know, St. Louis, if you know people and hang out with people there, it's a fun city. There's fun stuff going on, but I was just being a party pooper. I was mad at everyone and everything at that time. So it was just kind of a weird, dark part of my life where I think I had like an old Sega Genesis and I just kind of played that a lot and just drank.
I remember when you moved to Lawrence at first, I was going out every night pretty much. And I could get you to come with me maybe two or three nights.
Yeah.
But usually you just wanted to stay at home.
Yeah. When I first got back.
But you started going to school. So some of it was because you had responsibilities and I had fuck all to do.
That's true. I wouldn't say that I started taking school seriously, but I started thinking I need to work toward graduating. Otherwise I'm just spending money on nothing. Cause I was paying for my own college. I wasn't getting a mom and dad paycheck to pay for college. I was paying for my own college and flunking classes that I was paying for out of my own pocket, which is really stupid. That's a really dumb thing to do. So I was like, okay, either I'm going to just be done with college or I need to start taking it seriously enough to actually work toward graduating or else I'm just spending money for no reason.
Yeah.
And I don't know why I decided to go to college. I think I just didn't know what else to do with myself. So, and I just thought like, well, people go to college, I guess I'll do that. And yeah, it was community college for at least the first couple of years. So at least I wasn't like spending university money. I was failing out of community college classes, which is quite the feat. It is not easy to fail a community college class. You got to put some real work into that shit.
I mean, you're putting work into your fucking alcoholism.
I was. But yeah, I enrolled in Kansas City, Kansas Community College when I got back. I dropped out of St. Louis Community College. Started going to Kansas City, Kansas Community College and commuting from Lawrence. It's about, you know, like, what is that, like a 40 minute drive each way? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I can't believe, I had a Mercury Topaz at the time. I cannot believe that car made it between Kansas City and Lawrence every day, every weekday anyway. And then I was working too. I was on top of that. I was like working around my school schedule and you got me the job at the tofu factory.
It was weird. The tofu factory was weird. It was like 3 days a week and like 1 p.m. That's right. to 9 p.m. or something like that.
Oh, yeah, that's and, right. I was mad because I had to take morning classes and I hated taking morning classes because I couldn't get up in the morning, let alone get up and drive 45 minutes and be there by 8. That was difficult.
Before you moved to town, I was riding my bike there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing that in the winter, and that winter was fucking gnarly. I had gloves, coat, hat, scarves, everything on, and I would get home at like 9:30, and my hands would hurt so fucking bad from the cold. I mean, I had to learn how to ride a bike in the ice, because for like 3 weeks there was just fucking ice on the ground. Mm-hmm. It was fucked up,
but. I don't remember how long I worked at the tofu factory, but I quit the same time you did.
It couldn't have been very long because I was there. I mean, and I think the Locust show, I had just gotten off work at Central Soy and like when I don't even know if I changed. I was probably all wet because you had to hose the whole fucking place down. I think I was still all wet from that shit when the Locust show started, if I remember right. I don't know though.
And I must have been working there then too, and I don't remember why I was running later than you. For some reason I think stuck at work.
Did you want to take a shower? Is that why?
Maybe I took a shower, but I had to get beer too. I think I had to like go to the liquor store, and maybe you already had alcohol, but like I had to like run some errands. There was something that was holding me up. Like, I had to like run some errands and I wanted to like not smell like Central Soy. Like I changed my clothes.
I had to come in earlier than you because I was making the soy milk. And so I don't think I had to stay and clean everything. I just had to clean the soy milk room.
Right.
And clean the tanks out. And you had to clean up all the fucking tofu shit, which takes a lot longer. I think that's what happened. Cause, I would come in at like, on those days, I think I came in at like 11 and made the soy milk before they even started making the tofu, because it's before they put the salt and shit in it to separate the curds and whey. So they did that later in the day, and if I was just there, I think I was just there making soy milk. So
So I was working later than you, and I had to swing by the liquor store on the way back because I had to. I was piss poor at planning, so I was just like, "Oh fuck, I didn't get any alcohol. I gotta go get alcohol." And so I had to go get some beer and like run home and change my clothes and find the right shirt from the medium dirty pile, and then. Yeah, running with 12-pack in hand, trying to get there. It's like, I'm going to get there before the show starts. Fucking full of cops.
I also remember at this time, like, little Johnny would ask us to buy alcohol for him and shit.
Mm-hmm.
And we would, but we would not let him carry it from the car to our houses because we were worried about getting pinched or getting in trouble by the cops.
Right. And, yeah, absolutely. Like,
We always had a rule like, we'll go buy you alcohol, but we like you can't touch it until we get inside our house.
Right after Central Soy, I think. Well, you were working at the at La Familia and Central Soy at the same time, right?
Uh-uh.
Oh, you weren't?
No. Nope. I quit Central Soy and was like, what the fuck am I going to do? And then I think maybe Ryan told me to go to La Familia because he was still around at that point and like wasn't being like a crazy person.
I remember the next job I got. I completely forgot about it. So you went to go work for La Familia and I went to go work for Domino's Pizza because I knew pizza. And I was like, fuck it. I'm just going to go get a pizza job again. I'm going to deliver pizzas. And I went to go work for the Domino's on 9th and Iowa. So for anyone who doesn't know, Lawrence's streets are all either numbers or state names. So when you hear us say Kentucky, Iowa, Ohio, we're talking about the streets in Lawrence, Kansas, not the states. For anyone who doesn't know that already, I realized if you're not familiar with Lawrence, Kansas, that might get confusing. So I'm just going to go and throw that out there so we can just, put that to rest.
I remember what I was thinking. So, I've told a bunch of people the story a million times, but it's adorable. So I have to tell it on the podcast. When you moved back to Lawrence, your folks came up. I don't know if they were helping you move or if they were just coming to see the new place or whatever, but your dad came up to me. I was like carrying some shit in the house and he's like, "Hey, I know you guys are really good friends. And I know it was hard on Nick moving to St. Louis and you moving here. And I'm just glad to see you guys back together." And it was like this really sweet moment. And I'm about 90% sure he thought we were a couple together. And that like he was really uncomfortable having that conversation with me. But like, I'm just glad that he could accept our love
together
and our relationship as roommates and hetero life partners.
And I could see why he would have thought that, because I never brought the girls I was dating home. I never brought them to my parents' house. I kept my romantic life and my life with my family as two completely separate things. In fact, I didn't really, you were one of even the only friends that they knew of mine. Like I didn't bring my friends over, didn't bring my girlfriends over. And that's just kind of how I grew up in a pretty strict religious household. So my house was never the spot to hang out. So I just got used to just not bringing people over. It was just easier for me to go to them. And so, like I could see why my dad might think like, "Oh, maybe my son is gay," because I never brought my girlfriends home. So he just didn't know when I was dating, like, and who I was dating, with very few exceptions.
Yeah, it was adorable and very sweet. And Yeah, it was very nice.
Well, they were so stoked that I was just back in Kansas. Oh, even though I didn't live in the same town as them, I was at least in the same state. And I don't remember where they were living at the time. I think they might have been in Great Bend or somewhere in like central western Kansas, somewhere like that. So yeah,
that's like a 5-hour drive from Lawrence or something.
Easily, so like a 10-hour drive from St. Louis. So yeah. They were just happy that I'd come back. Like, you know, it took them half as long to come see me. But yeah, so I went to work for Domino's after Central Soy. And I can't believe I completely forgot that that job I had at Domino's. There was one point where the Westboro Baptist Church came to protest Domino's for some reason.
Why?
I think they just like being like just complaining about things. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of things wrong with Domino's. But I would wager, I mean, I don't know if you know this, but the owner of Domino's is like devout Catholic, and he like built his own town in Florida where they don't allow condoms. And, you know, I mean,
that's probably why they Westboro Baptist Church, Baptist. So they think Catholics are the devil. Also,
that's
so
true. Yeah.
I guess that tracks, but
yeah.
You know, you gotta remember this is pre 9/11. This is pre, God loves dead soldiers or whatever the hell
right.
they moved to. This was still the rampant homophobia time. Yeah. This is before they had also included soldiers in the military. They were strictly obsessed with queer folk back then.
Yeah. God hates. I'm not going to say the sign. No, the F-slur. But if you Google it, you'll see the sign. It's God hates F word. And I don't mean fuck.
Yeah, they said the F slur all the time. And,
constantly. But yeah, they came to protest Domino's while I was working. And I told the manager, I was like, I want to go out there and fuck with them. And he was like, yeah, go ahead. And like me and like a bunch of the other people who worked there, like just kind of like walked out of the store and went and fucked with the Westboro Baptist Church people.
Yeah.
Who, by the way, have no sense of humor. That should not come as a shock.
Well, I mean, that's kind of what they were doing. One of their tactics is to bait people into violating their right to protest and assault them and then sue them and make money off of that. But for those that don't know, the Westboro Baptist Church is in Topeka, which is only like 30 or 40 minutes away from Lawrence. So
it's like 20 minutes. Drive it's like super close. Yeah. Yeah.
Super easy for them to come to Lawrence and, you know, protest.
Lawrence, which is a, you know, one of the only left-leaning cities in Kansas. So it's the perfect target for them. But yeah. There was one counter protester there who was in a chicken suit and he was carrying a sign that said, "Who farted?"
See, that's the kind of counter protest too. Them that I can get behind,
right?
Because it's not what they want. That's not the kind of counter protest they want. They want people to be angry. They want people to assault them. I mean, that's what they're trying to do by holding those signs.
The counter protester just kept like the Phelps people were yelling at us, and the counter protester kept pretending to be on the side of the Phelps people. Like they were like get away from us. He's like, no, I'm on your side. Who farted?
That's great. Yeah, we moved out in January, which is why I became homeless.
Of 2002.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember why did we move out of?
Because there was raw sewage in the basement, and they wouldn't fucking fix it.
Oh yeah, that's right. Oh, that was when I moved in with that dude in KCK.
So there was the Locust Show. That was like a pretty big deal. I'm trying to think of the next like big fun thing that happened. Oh, I know what it was. We had another party at our house. I don't know why. I don't know. Jason Bulkelman was living with us.
Oh yeah.
And we got like two kegs or something. And maybe it was your birthday. I think that may be what it was, because you were back for your birthday. And we had a party on a Friday night. And then Saturday night, you, Jason, and I were just sitting on the porch trying to drain the last of our keg. Mm-hmm. And it was probably 1:30, 2 in the morning. We're just sitting there drinking beers. And all of a sudden, a car goes by and we hear like 4 or 5 shots
mm-hmm.
into the air. Well, first there was a fight. There was a party at the apartments across the street, mm-hmm. and there was a fight, some sort of kerfuffle. It wasn't even that big of a deal.
Some dudes got kicked out, basically.
Yeah, they got.
I don't remember why, but they got kicked out of the party, and they were not happy about it.
Right, and
there was a scuffle in the yard. Leahy was there too. I'm pretty sure Leahy was there too.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
So there was a scuffle in the yard, but I don't even think any fists were thrown. I think it was just like a little bit of shoving. Like, get the fuck out of here. And then they came back around and shot. And I saw the muzzle flashes.
Yeah.
And they were up in the air, so it wasn't like... I don't think anybody was in danger.
No.
It was still pretty fucked up.
They were just trying to freak people out.
Yeah. So then, you know, we went over to the party and made sure everybody was okay. And, like, kind of asked what happened or whatever. And the cops came and we had to talk to the fucking cops.
Yeah.
And then like 6 months later, somebody from KBI called me and was like, yeah, we need your, we'd like to talk to you about this incident. And I was like, oh fuck. I was like, I'm not going to fucking court. I'll give a statement, I guess. But,
right.
Did you ever get a call? Cause you made a statement too. I know Jason did. I don't know about Jeff.
I never got a call. At least not one that I can remember. But yeah, it was weird. Like, it was one of those slow motion moments where I saw the car was going, it started going real slow. Mm-hmm. And then I saw the lights turn off and I was like, fuck. And like, I knew what was about to happen, but I also couldn't move. I was just I was like, fuck, dude. I was like, this is Lawrence, Kansas.
Right.
I've lived in some pretty fucked up neighborhoods before.
Right.
And I was not expecting that in Lawrence, fucking Kansas.
I mean, it was not rare to hear gunshots in Kansas City or even Kansas.
Wichita. Street. Yeah, Wichita. I heard gunshots in Wichita all the fucking time.
But I never, well, I guess it's not completely true, but never at a punk house that I see any drive-bys in the neighborhoods where I would expect. But in Lawrence, just like right in front of our house, there was a fucking drive-by. It was fucking wild.
After the drive-by, if I remember right, I think Leahy slept on the couch that we had on our porch.
Yeah, maybe.
And I said, you just witnessed a drive-by right here, and you're going to sleep on the couch on the porch. And if I remember right, I think he said, and Leahy, if you listen to this, you can correct me if this isn't what you said, but I think you said something like, lightning don't strike twice, man. And then you rolled over and went to sleep.
Yeah, you were going to school a lot, and I was just getting fucked up all the time. I was working at, I was just working at La Familia at the time, I guess. And we were, like, super stoked because Propagandi was coming to play The Bottleneck. And we were super stoked to see it. And what was the date of that show?
That show, let's see. I have trouble remembering that date. I think it would have been September 11th of 2001.
I forgot. That's when.
But I think something else might have happened that day. What was that?
Yeah. So, yeah, that fucking sucked. You know, we partied all the time, and I got a call at like 8 a.m. I think from my girlfriend at the time. She had graduated from KU and was living back in Wichita. She called me super early in the morning and was like, have you watched TV today? I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? I watched TV today.
Yeah.
It's not time for me to get up. And she's like, well, turn on the TV real quick. I was like, all right. And I was like, what the fuck is this? This can't be real. It was so fucking weird and surreal. And basically watched the second plane hit the Twin Towers. And then I had to go to work at La Familia, and mm-hmm. I think we had maybe 3 customers all day long. And we just sat and watched TV
I had class that day. I had class at Kansas City, Kansas Community College. So when you got that call, I was already on my way to school. Because I had one of those dreaded morning classes that I hated signing up for, but it was the only time that it was like a required class and whatever. And so I was listening to the radio, and they said a plane had crashed into a building in New York. I don't even think they said the World Trade Center. I think they said a plane in New York, and they were saying it was like a prop plane or like a little like like they didn't say it was a
jumbo
passenger jumbo jet, and they were talking about, you know, a plane has crashed into it, and they just made it sound like it was like, oh, the plane, you know, probably the pilot's dead, and that's probably about it. And I was like, oh, yeah. Wild. And then when I got to school, I think that was when the second plane hit, and I walked in, and they had TVs in the entryway, and I'm just watching, like, these planes hitting the Twin Towers, and I'm like, wait, what the fuck is going on? Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no, it was weird because, like, everybody just went to class. I was like, okay, well, I got this class I have to go to. And people just kind of went about their business because no one really knew what to do.
Yeah.
And we were in Kansas City. It's like, I mean, well, what are we going to do? We can't do anything. We can't help anyone. We're just here.
Yeah. I remember watching the footage. I mean, people jumping out of the building. I remember. Mm-hmm. Those images, and I remember watching the second plane. I remember them collapsing. It was a fucked up day, and needless to say, Propagandhi did not play that night.
No, they did not. Show was canceled.
We wound up having there was probably like 30 or 40 people at our house that night, bummed out that Propagandhi wasn't playing, and we were just getting drunk and being scared of what came next, because we were still draftable age at that point.
I remember, and I don't know if you remember this. I remember you were really drunk, and you were saying like, we're gonna get fucking drafted into the army. Mm-hmm. We're gonna get, and you started talking about like plans. You were like you still have that map in your car, and I'm like, yeah. And then you're like, okay, well, let's plan our route to Canada or something like that.
Yeah, I wasn't gonna fucking go to war, man.
Right. Like, just like, I was like, well, let's kind of see what happens. Like, I don't think I was like, this is horrible. I don't think we're going to war over this. Cut to the longest war in American history.
Right. I talked to your mom, called, and I talked to her, and I was really drunk, and I think I talked to her about getting drafted and how scared I was.
Mm-hmm.
And then she talked to you. I assume it was a similar conversation, because we were both pretty freaked out about that shit.
I love my mom and you know, my dad too, but they're not going to be sympathetic about, especially our generation at that time. We were the youngsters at the time being drafted. I come from a military family. So
yeah,
my dad had talked to me and was like, you should probably go sign up. So,
fuck.
So they weren't going to offer the sympathy that we were looking for at that point.
Right. Yeah. there was a lot of people in town for that show. So we got to hang out with a lot of our favorite people during one of the weirdest and scariest times. Like, it was really scary at the time. Mm-hmm. Like, at least to me, because I thought for sure I was going to fucking war.
I was a little more optimistic. I didn't think that we would go to war, and certainly not in the way that we did. I honestly thought this is going to bring the country together, and it did for a little while, surface level at least. And I thought, this is going to bring the country together, and I think we're going to see, you know, kind of a new golden age emerge out of this. And wow, I shouldn't predict things, because I could have been more wrong. It's just gotten progressively worse since then.
The other thing that was really striking, and I'm just glad I didn't have a car at the time, but the gas prices went up. I think there was some place selling gas for like $7 a gallon.
Yeah.
It was fucking wild. Shit was crazy. I've still never seen Propagandhi. God damn it.
I got to see them. I saw them years later. in Virginia Beach, Virginia, at a venue called the Jewish Mother. And it was spectacular. I got to talk to them after the show. I wasn't blackout drunk, so I actually remember my conversation with them.
Nice.
It was fucking great. Yep, I had a great time.
Excellent. I think 9/11 is a pretty good spot to end it. Because that's kind of a pretty big moment.
Yeah, this is, you know, and
in Lawrence,
saying we didn't plan this episode very well is just it's an understatement. But yeah, we've both been bonkers busy with things like moving and our kids and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't talked about the time I got to talk shit on Limp Bizkit, have I? Or did I do that?
No, I don't. Oh, wait, you did, right, in Lawrence, right?
Yeah, after Warped Tour.
Yeah, you saw him at like a hotel in North Lawrence, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I was also an asshole to Marcy Playground.
I forgot they existed. Tell that story. That's wild. It's a part of my brain I wanted to keep shut, so fuck you. Fuck you for that. You know,
there's the story about Andrew mm-hmm. beating the shit out of 10 Nazis with a 2x4.
Nice. I didn't even know that. It would be cool, too. Like, you know, you kind of, like, sparked, like, an idea of, yeah, like, of letting other people talk about, you know, their scenes around the Midwest, too. Like, mm-hmm. you know, the scene of people coming up in, yeah, in like Oklahoma or Nebraska, Iowa, Minnesota, you know, fucking anywhere like that.
Yeah, the Prairie is not just Kansas, you know. There's
right.
There's a Missouri scene. There's mm-hmm. the Arkansas scene. The Sufi Nun Squad guys.
Yeah.
You know, they were, what would you describe them as? I mean, was that folk punk? I mean, it kind of like performance. Of kids.
Is performance punk a thing?
Yeah. I mean, they were all art school kids, I think.
Right.
Doing yeah. performance art punk rock.
Yeah.
Oh, that, I mean, and Laszlo knows a lot about them. He'd be really good to have on the show because he booked cool. a bunch of shit.
Yeah.
He's the one that booked the Faint show mm-hmm. during the potluck that nobody knew about because he left town after he booked the Faint on a nice. Potluck night. And the Faint showed up and nobody knew what the fuck was going on.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to doing more movie reviews. I think the movie reviews might be delayed. I'm going out of town for work for 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. So the movie reviews might get delayed till I get back, unfortunately. But then we are planning on doing two back-to-back. Suburbia and Suburbia will come out back-to-back when I return from my job trip.
If anybody wants to fill our gaps, message us, let us know what we fucked up,
mm-hmm.
Message us and let us know about your bands playing shows.
Yeah.
Anything like that. It's super cool. I'm looking forward to going out on the 11th to see a show. I haven't been out in quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be weird. I might need to find somebody to come with me just because now that I'm sober, I'm a bit more socially awkward than I used to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's harder to get out.
I need to go to more shows. I mean, I mean, there's always shows in Chicago. I mean, it's constant. It's kind of it's more of a, you know, how do I hunt down the ones I really want to see, as opposed to there not being enough. But yeah, I don't really have the time to go to shows constantly.
Yeah. Well, that's all I got. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll have a longer episode next time, maybe. We'll at least prepare better. It'll at least be a little tighter. I don't know.
Bye. Good night.
All right. Bye.